Hi, everyone. I know recently we announced we were going to 2 episodes a week and then 3 episodes a week. But you know what? There are just too many episodes. So we are going to back to 5 episodes a week. Still a reduction from 7, but there were just too many interviews scheduled, and I didn't want to make all the authors wait for too long. So I hope you can keep up with me. Listen to 1 a week as you're on your way to work or on your way home or putting your kids to bed or whatever it is you're doing. Moms don't have time to read books now 5 times a week.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, the creator and host of the award-winning podcast that you're listening to right now, thank you so much, called Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. It is a daily podcast, 365 days a year, and each day we talk to an author about all of the things related to their career, their book, their life, and more in 30 minutes or less, because who has time? I am now an author myself, although I wasn't when I started this podcast, and you can get my new memoir, Bookends, a memoir of love, loss, and literature, wherever books are sold starting July 1st, and my children's book, Princess Charming. You can learn more about me at zibbyowens.com, but really, you're here to learn more about the authors, and that is what we're going to do. Also, be sure to check out all the other podcasts in the Zcast Podcast Network. You can learn more at zcastnetwork.com and definitely check out those shows as well. Today is a special week for Zibby Books because we have announced our spring season of books launching in 2023 and are releasing one cover each day for this week of September 19th. On at Zibby Books on Instagram. So check it out and follow along and see what our first books coming out starting in February 2023 are all about on Zibby Books. And while you're at it, check out the new Zibby Mag, zibbymag.com, which we launched last week and is the new literary lifestyle destination. Check it out. Nabil Ayers is the author of My Life in the Sunshine, Searching for My Father and Discovering My Family. He has written about race and music for the New York Times, NPR, Pitchfork, Rolling Stone, and GQ. His memoir was published on June 7, 2022. He is the president of Beggars Group US, where he has run campaigns for The National, Big Thief, Grimes, Future Islands, and St. Vincent, as well as reissue campaigns including Pixies' album Doolittle, which was certified platinum in 2019. At the age of 25, Ayers and his business partner opened Seattle's Sonic Boom Record Store, which they sold to a longtime customer in 2016. As a drummer, Ayers has performed in several bands, including The Long Winters and Tommy Stinson. On his own record label, The Control Group / Valley of Search, Ayers has released music by Kate Lebon, Leaky Lee, The Killers, PJ Harvey, Patricia Brennan, and his uncle, the jazz musician Alan Broffman. He lives in Brooklyn with his wife. Welcome, Nabil. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss My Life in the Sunshine, Searching for My Father and Discovering My Family.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
Oh, it's nice to have you here. You wrote this beautiful memoir, musical in its lyricism and in the way you wrote it, but also all the music influences in it, in the way you talk about your family was so interesting. Start out by explaining more about the book and also how this misperception that your mother was left when really that was not at all what happened.
Right. The book starts the moment my mother meets my father when she was 20 years old and my father was, I think, 29. And he's a relatively famous jazz musician named Roy Ayers. And she was a kind of retired ballerina who was lost in New York, not sure what to do, and knew in her head that she wanted to be a young single mother. And the moment she met my father, she said, "This is the person I want to have my child with." And to be clear, she didn't say, "This is the person I want to be with," or "This is the person I want to marry." It was all about the child and her raising a child on her own. So they got together a few times and she eventually asked him, "Will you be the father of my child? You don't have to be involved in our lives." And he said yes. And I've always known that story. And she's always known that story, obviously. And everyone kind of kept their end of the deal. So I had this really idyllic, amazing childhood where my father wasn't in the picture, but it never really felt like he was missing because there wasn't a divorce. He didn't leave us. Everything happened exactly the way it was planned. And I had an incredible uncle and really great male role models. And I think in a lot of ways, a better childhood than a lot of people with, you know, traditional on paper, perfect two-parent households. So that's kind of where it begins.
Yeah, you don't often hear somebody saying like, that's the, you know, let me just grab that DNA, you know, like,
I know,
but I love it. It was so empowering. But later in the book, you talk about how it's almost a selfish act when a woman decides that on the part of the child, like you wish she would have had a dad, like, you know, why were you deprived of that before you even had a shot? Like, why didn't she position it, like, be involved? So tell me
about it. And that's what's interesting now that the book is out. Of course, I'm getting lots of, you know, opinions solicited and unsolicited from friends and other people who say, but you never got to be part of this decision, which is, of course, a great point that I lived my life based on a decision these two other people made.
Right.
And there were points at which, I mean, it wasn't until my 30s that I finally decided, I think it's time to try to meet my father. He's always sort of existed in my life because I hear his music all the time. People ask me if I'm related to him. We work in the same business and live in the same city, but truly don't know each other, never see each other. So when I had lunch with him when I was about 35, we really got along well and connected. And it kind of felt like that's the first time I sort of had some different questions for my mother, which were kind of, you know, I think she always protected me and in a way didn't expose me to him because she was worried that I might miss him or feel like something was missing, whereas we had this really great life without him. And I think as soon as I met him and realized, oh, wow, there's a connection here and there could be more, I thought about the past and thought, huh, what if my mother had helped me do this when I was 10 or 20 or even 30. I mean, you know, 35 years old is pretty old to finally kind of meet your father for the first time. So that's the first time I wouldn't say I felt anger, but didn't see everything exactly as my mother had presented it.
Yeah. And you said also that it was so crazy for you to see somebody who looked so much like you.
Oh, it was really wild to sit across from him at a table at a restaurant and just mannerisms and the way he laughed and certain motions and sounds. It was just like, this is so weird. We've never really met, but that's exactly what I would do.
Oh my gosh.
Really powerful. Yeah.
That is crazy. You did write a lot about your uncle, Alan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your mom's brother and how he was so influential in raising you as well. And you wove him into like so many scenes all throughout. Tell me about like, what's your relationship now? Like,
yeah.
Dad, how does that work? Because then he had his own children and everything, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's still a huge part of my life. Alan is, I guess, 70.
I never want to assume anything.
I know. He's 71. Yeah. Okay. I think he's 71. I mean, the crazy thing is that he and my mother never drank, never into drugs, even in New York in the late 60s, early 70s, very clean living, sort of hippie people. So they have these really perfect memories. They're in great health. It's great. So he's 2 years younger than my mother. They grew up very close to each other, both moved to New York City as soon as they could when they were around 18. And when my mother decided to have me, Alan pretty much vowed at that moment to be a part of my life. When my mother was kind of having this, well, this is what I want to do, but what am I doing moment, Alan stepped in and said, "Don't worry, I'm here. Everything's going to be fine." And he was always a huge part of my life. Even when we didn't live in the same city, I would spend summers with him in New York, or he would come visit us. And he was really my father figure. And what's interesting is, you know, I've had a life in music. I played music, played drums in bands for decades. And now I run a record company, and that's all I've ever done is something to do with music. And the assumption has kind of always been that I got that from my father, who's a very talented, famous musician. But I'm sure I got some of his DNA, but I never got anything else from him. Whereas Alan and my mother both really nurtured that. Alan bought me a drum set when I was 2 years old, and he would play music with me, and he took me to so many concerts and bought me records. And, you know, the two of them were the people that really made sure that music was part of my daily life. So it's this nature versus nurture thing.
Didn't Alan go to Berklee School of Music?
Oh, he did, of course. Yeah.
He also had that in his
also an amazing musician. Yeah. Yeah. And we've also learned sort of later on that on my mother's side and Alan's side, there are tons of classical musicians and opera singers and way more people than we thought.
You were just doomed.
Right. It comes from everyone.
Determined. Yeah. It was, you know, what choice did you have, really?
Yeah.
Tell me about being part Jewish. I was sort of surprised to read about this. I am Jewish myself.
Oh, you are.
How you changed your name. Tell me that whole piece. And that, like, visiting your family was so funny. And I had a Grandpa Joe, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Visited your Grandpa Joe in Flatbush. Mm-hmm. Okay, let me just read this little passage. Let's see. You were talking about what it looked like in Flatbush. You said, they looked at my mother and me, but nobody smiled or said hello. The residents of Flatbush likely had no idea that by Jewish law, both my mother and I were Jewish. Instead, we walked the streets feeling judged and unwelcome. But when we arrived at Grandpa Joe's, we were home. He's such a schnorrer, Edith would say, describing a neighbor who always asks to borrow things. She was hawking me like a chinook. Joe exclaimed about a former colleague who talked too much. The next winter, when my mother brought me to the doctor with a serious cold, the doctor asked me to describe my symptoms. I don't even know how to pronounce shock.
A hawk and a schnoz.
I have a hawk and a schnoz, I said in a nasal voice, describing my sore throat and stuffy nose in my own made-up Yiddish sounding terms.
I'm glad you like that as a Jewish person and you aren't offended by it. I mean,
should I be offended?
No, not at all. Yeah, it's my mother and Alan, my uncle, were raised by my grandparents who are Russian and Romanian Jewish in Long Island, and they were raised Jewish, and everyone's last name was Brafman, which comes from the Romanian Brafmanu, very Jewish name. And I was raised or born Nabil Brafman, and that was my name until I was done with high school. But I wasn't raised Jewish. I wasn't really raised in any religion. My uncle and my mother didn't convert, but sort of became, this is the word I like to use, Baha'is, the Baha'i faith in New York in the early 70s, which is a very open, accepting religion that's all about equality and peace and love. And it's pretty amazing. And my name comes from a Baha'i book. So they never abandoned their Jewish faith, but they definitely sort of took on something else. And so we went to a lot of Baha'i things when I was a kid, but Jewish culture was always a huge part of my childhood. I saw my grandparents a lot. I knew my great-grandparents, who you just read about. And that scene, I mean, we used to go visit them in Flatbush in Brooklyn. And what we haven't mentioned yet is that my father is black and my mother is white. And my mother was definitely, even when I was 10 years old, you know, a pretty young, cool hippie who wore, you know, great dancer outfits. And so I was just remembering what it was like for us to walk down the street in this sort of conservative Jewish neighborhood, her in like really short shirts and a tank top and me with an afro and probably a Kiss t-shirt. Like it was a crazy scene. And what those people didn't know is that we were going to visit my 80-year-old great-grandfather, Joe Chesler, to go, you know, eat lox and gefilte fish and do the whole thing. And I that very much felt like and still feels like part of me. And my wife is Jewish, and we had a Jewish wedding with a rabbi. And I don't necessarily consider myself Jewish because I don't, you know, I don't go to temple or do anything, but it's a huge part of me.
I would say a lot of people who are Jewish don't temple, and you know, I mean, it's all about, a lot of it is about the sort of the identity and culture behind it, as you will know. But
and my mother, the funny thing is, my mother is now back to being Jewish, culturally Jewish, but her husband is a non-Jewish person from North Dakota who converted, which, as you know, is much more difficult to become a Jew that way than to be raised Jewish and simply fall into it. And I went to his bar mitzvah when he was 60 and watched him chant the Torah. And he does all the work. He's super devout. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh. My husband converted when we got married, my second husband. Anyway, it was very sweet. Yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't really know that. But yeah, it's a good crash course.
Yeah.
Tell me about the process of writing this book, or when did you even decide to write a book, and then what was it like doing it?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I have never been a writer. I loved writing in college. I was a terrible student because all I was doing was playing in bands and putting on parties and DJing at the college radio station and doing all the things that applied directly to my life in the music business now. And it all makes sense when I look back. But the only A I got in college was in a writing class. And it wasn't because I really buckled down or worked hard. It was simply because I loved it and it felt natural and it was really fun and easy for me. So I thought about that, but then I, you know, started working in the music business and playing in bands, and it just was never part of my life. And about 6 years ago, I just started writing. I think I was old enough in my 40s, and I had so many stories in my head about touring in bands and the record store I used to own, and just lots of things that for some reason it felt like I feel like I should start writing these down, not necessarily to publish them, not even for anyone to see them. And this, if I think about it, this, my mother does this. I get emails every day that are kind of short stories, her observations from riding the subway and the people that she saw. And my grandmother wrote a ton of short stories, and I found them a few years ago, and they're really incredible about, you know, Brooklyn in the 40s and 50s. So I think maybe it's just kind of in my blood, the sort of storytelling or documenting of my life. So I started writing these fun stories and published a couple of them, which was really fun and exciting and felt good. And my wife finally said, look, this is really fun. It's great that you're writing about your record stores and your band. What you should really do is write about your father and your race, because that's what you're interested in and that's what people will be interested in. And I thought about it and it scared me a bit, but in a good way, because those are much more personal topics. Those are things I don't talk about very much. And in a weird way, I thought, oh, that's a great idea, because I'm already writing with no plan for anyone to see it. So I don't see why I can't tackle these more difficult subjects with no plan for anyone to see it. So I did, but I'd never known my father. So I remember being puzzled and sitting there in the Brooklyn Historical Society Library, where I did a lot of writing at the time, and kind of saying, what do I write about? And I thought, well, I can just write about each of the times I met him when I was a kid and what that felt like. And there was one time when my uncle brought me to Electric Lady, a famous recording studio in New York, and we met him for a brief moment. Or another time when we ran into him on the street and my mother sort of introduced me to him. All these things that were in my head. So I started writing those as just kind of short stories, and then started writing about what it was like to hear my father's music at a bar or in a club, which happens all the time and it used to happen all the time, or when someone asks me if I'm related to him, all these things. And eventually, it's very visual to me. This was all on a computer, of course, but I saw this long table and these little stacks of paper that started at age zero and went till, you know, very recently. So decades of stories. And I realized, that's interesting. If I just could figure out a way to connect these and kind of figure out a theme and a sort of binding element, which of course is music, I might be able to turn this into a book. And that's the first time that it occurred to me. I was never trying to write a book. And I think it would have been much harder to say, I'm going to write a book, chapter one, and do, there's no part of me that was ready to do that. But I'd done so much of the hard work. Not, I mean, there's still a lot to do, but emotionally sort of getting into the father stuff, which was the hardest part. I'd already sort of taken my brain and my heart there. So it felt like, well, now I'm in it. So I should just really try to do this.
Wow. Interesting.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Sometimes we all have stuff we need to get off our chests. Even if we don't think it's interfering with our daily life, there are some things you just haven't processed, be it grief or trauma, eating disorders, anything. It might be time to work on those things, and I have a solution for you. Therapy.
online therapy by BetterHelp. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. I took the brief questionnaire online where there were, 20 questions. It didn't take long at all, maybe 3 minutes. And then I got matched with a therapist who could help me work on whatever. I picked trauma because even though it happened in 2001, I am somehow still not over the loss of my friend on 9/11. And it is what it is. BetterHelp is going to help. And I am so excited, especially because with my special code, instead of $80 a month, it is 10% off, $72 a month, which is so much less than traditional therapy. And you'll get a perfect therapist for you. There are 35,000 therapists to choose from, so you'll find the right one. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/momsdonthavetime today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/momsdonthavetime.
And then when did you sell it and all that? Like, what happened then?
I spent about a year and a half, probably closer to 2 years on my own getting it together and got it pretty far. There's a version of it that was done. Mm-hmm. And then it's funny because I don't know anyone in the publishing world, no agents, no authors. I'm just in a totally different business, but in such a similar, you know, in New York, where I know lots of people who know lots of people. So I looked online and it said, you have to have a book proposal. And so I said, okay, I'll write a book proposal. And I wrote one and I had a lot of fun doing it. And it actually helped me figure out the end of the book, which was great. And I just started emailing some friends and saying, hey, who knows a literary agent? Apparently that's what I need to get this to the next step. And a bunch of friends got back in touch and some people put me in touch with people. And this, you know, took a few months, but I met with, I think, 7 agents and had offers from most of them, which was shocking and amazing, and chose my favorite one, who I love and still work with. And it was a crazy thing because I work in the music business again, where, you know, I used to play in bands and you want to get signed. And there's always some confident manager who would be like, I'm going to get you a record deal in 2 months. I'm just going to send this out and you're going to get signed. And so I've been there a million times. And so my agent said, look, we're in a great place. This proposal's great. Let me tweak it. I'm going to get it out to a really small group of people who I think will like it. And I think we'll do a deal by Thanksgiving. And this was in September of 2019. And so I thought, well, that's crazy, but sure, do your thing. And to make a long story short, sign the deal with Viking before Thanksgiving.
Wow. And which agent did you pick? Who was your agent?
It's Meg Thompson.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I hear more great things about her.
Oh, she's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. That's awesome.
And then it was another, about a year and a half of working with my editor, Meg Leader, who I loved, and which was such a better process than I could have even imagined. Where, you know, of course, there were times when I got frustrated because she was, I'm sure, working on other books or taking a long time to work on my book. But then when she would bring a draft back to me, just the notes and the edits and the thoughts were so incredibly helpful and spot on. And there was never a moment that I feared, which was always going to be like, oh, she doesn't know what she's talking about. What is this? You know, you hear about things like that. It never even came close to happening. It was really just a great match. And she totally understood it and helped make it so much better.
Oh my gosh. Would you ever do it again now that you know what it's like?
Yeah.
Are you doing it again?
I'm not doing it again yet. I mean, this weekend, I finally had time to kind of sit and do some writing. But it's a funny thing, and I'm sure you've experienced this, and lots of people have. I mean, the way that the first book came was so natural, mm-hmm. and I wasn't trying, and I had all the time in the world, and there were no expectations. Nobody asked me to write a book, and then it kind of happened. And now I definitely have this like, well, what's next? What are you doing? People are asking me, and so it is a different kind of pressure, but I'm just trying to do the same thing I did before, which is just think about what's interesting to me and write about it and see where it goes.
Well, you know your process. So they, right. there's no straight line to getting this output, you know, world land, you know, for people who aren't as familiar with your dad or you, and maybe music is not the center of their world or whatever, can you give more like insight so that maybe when they hear a song or, you know, what you're working on now in the music world and just give a little more background there.
Yeah. And my dad is named Roy Ayers. He is 81 right now, which is crazy, but he's been playing music for a long time. He's known as a jazz musician, but also sort of seminal in the kind of jazz funk scene where it kind of merged in the 70s. He's super heavily sampled, I think perhaps the most sampled artist of all time. And so really had this big resurgence in the 90s and 2000s when hip hop started doing that. And his most famous song is called Everybody Loves the Sunshine, which even if you don't know it by name, you've probably heard. I mean, I think it was in 5 different commercials last year alone. It was in an Apple commercial and a Coors commercial. It's really crazy how much this song from 1976 just lives on. So, and he has tons of albums and he's touring Europe right now as we speak. Very active, you know, can't do anything but play music. And we still don't know each other, but I like him and I love his music. and as far as me, I mean, I've played music all my life. My uncle started, you know, playing music with me. He's a saxophone player. I would play drums. He would play saxophone. We have amazing audio recordings of that when I was 3 or 4. And when he would have been like in his early 20s, and it's me being really bossy. And you can hear my mother in the background introducing us. And then, and I was exposed to a lot of jazz and kind of funk as a kid.
I love how you were carrying around your sticks.
Oh yeah. I really wanted people to know I was a drummer. That was important. It was like carrying around like a sign walking around drumsticks. Yeah. There's lots of pictures. And then I saw Kiss when I was, I discovered Kiss when I was 5, and my mother took me to see them at Madison Square Garden when I was 7, which was truly a life-changing moment. And from then on, it was just like, I just want to be a rock drummer and that's it. And we moved a lot, lived in New York and Amherst, Massachusetts and Salt Lake City. But all I was trying to do was play in bands and moved to Seattle to go to college in 1989, which was just an incredible time. That's right when Nirvana and Soundgarden and grunge and all that stuff started to happen. And it was coincidence that I was there, but was really there at the right time. So was around for a lot of that, got to see some incredible shows and started playing in bands and toured through the 90s and 2000s, and also opened a record store with my friend, and always kind of had my feet in both sides. I was always interested in the business. Even as a kid, I was, you know, my band would record a demo tape and then I would try to sell it at school the next day. Like there's always a part of it that I understood and appreciated. So it wasn't weird for me to eventually stop touring in a band and start working for a record company. So now I'm the president of Beggars Group, which is, I think, the biggest independent label group. We work with Radiohead and The National and Grimes and Adele and tons of great artists. And it's a wonderful job.
Wow. What a great story. I mean, which is why it's a great book.
Thank you.
Really amazing. And we had joked at the beginning before we started recording, but now I will admit to everyone listening that I accidentally revealed the cover of this book and feel terrible about it in a post after I'd gotten the galley and didn't realize it hadn't been publicly revealed. So I've been feeling contrite about that.
I loved it. As I was saying, it was so funny because I turned 50 on January 23rd and my plan was I'm going to announce my book on my birthday. And then I thought, oh, actually, that's a Sunday. I should do it on a weekday so we can get some press pickup. Of course, the business mind kicked in. So I think whatever it was, I planned for a certain day. And I think the day before, your story popped up and I was like, oh my God. But my oh my God was like this incredible feeling of excitement because it's the first time I saw it on a phone screen and it was really amazing. And I loved it. And I think I DM'd you. I think I said like, thanks. I was going to post this tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. But honestly, it couldn't have been a better launch. And I'm thankful that you did that.
Oh, okay. Well, good.
It gave me this instant credibility.
Yeah. I do a lot of stuff on the weekends. Anyway, do you have any advice for aspiring authors now that you've gotten a book successfully out and everything?
I mean, I think I was so lucky and I really realized this that I've never been a writer or an author for a living. So I've always been able to take my own time, write about what I want to write about, not worry about getting paid for it, which are all, you know, it's an incredible luxury because I have a job and writing is sort of my whatever hobby or side hustle or whatever you want to call it. So I know everyone's not that fortunate, but I do think that's a way to think about it, as if you have another job or you do something else, which a lot of people do, and you want to write, the thing to do, what worked for me, what we just talked about, was really just writing with no intention of anyone seeing it ever. Just write for yourself. And it really, for me, took away this incredible layer of fear and insecurity and all the things that we all feel when we're writing about ourselves or about our feelings or our thoughts and all that stuff. And so it just allowed me to really write about anything and say anything. And then eventually, as I kind of honed it into this book or into shorter pieces or whatever, I just took out the things I was uncomfortable with, or sometimes left in those things because actually I was like, wow, I'm glad I said this because actually maybe I can say this. That's what really worked for me. And that's what I recommend, is just go in totally thinking no one's ever going to see this, and hopefully something good will come out of it.
And I think I'm going to take your wife's advice too. When she encouraged you to write the stuff that you really wanted to write, and mm-hmm. the stuff, even the stuff that made you feel scared and uncomfortable, that's usually yeah. stuff anyway. So
yeah,
might as well go there.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's hard. If it's hard, it's probably good.
Exactly.
That's, if it's feeling hard and I don't know, I feel like that's a really good sign.
Yeah.
For the reader, at least.
Yeah. Anyway,
yep. Nabil, thank you so much. Thanks for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books.
Thank you.
Shine, fabulous book. As you know, I really, really enjoyed it. And you're a great writer and have a wonderful story. So
thanks so much, Zibby. I appreciate you having me on, and hopefully I'll see you soon in New York.
Yes, that'd be great. All right.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.